Going to be reading from Matthew 18:15 through 20. If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. But if you are not listened to, take one or two others along with you, so that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If the member refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if the offender refuses to listen even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly I tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them. Jesus is talking about relationships, about how we should relate to one another, how we should be able to get through any kind of conflict or controversy we have with one another, that we should be having good relationships. And even if that means swallowing your pride and going to the other person and telling them you're sorry, even if you didn't cause it. In 1997, there was an Ann Landers letter in the newspapers, and it went like this. You recently printed a sweet How We Met story. The woman said at the end of World War II, she sat behind a soldier in church. He knew all the lyrics to the song, so she figured he couldn't be all bad. Later, she learned he was a doctor. 3 months later, she slipped on an icy walk and injured her arm. That same doctor insisted she stay in the infirmary, and he visited her twice a day. When she was discharged, he asked her to her movie to celebrate. They subsequently married in the same chapel where they had met. Now, that same letter, if it was written today, would sound like this. Last week I attended church services and noticed that the soldier sitting behind me knew all the words to every song. I figured anyone who knew those lyrics was probably a member of the religious right. I bumped into him a month later. After cussing him out and telling him to watch where he was going, I learned he was a doctor. 3 months later, I slipped on an icy walk and injured my arm. After suing the property owner for all I could get, this same doctor treated me and insisted that I stay in the infirmary. He then made twice daily visits to see how I was doing, which made me suspicious. I complained to his supervisor and filed a sexual harassment suit. I was discharged in January, and the doctor asked if I would like to see a movie to celebrate. I told the police he was a stalker and applied for a restraining order. When the doctor asked me to marry him in the same chapel where we first met, I called the FBI. They searched his apartment to make sure there were no shrines built to me and no bodies hidden under the floorboards. I married the guy anyway, because after all, doctors earn six-figure incomes. The sad thing is, that letter, even though it's a little bit corny, a little extreme, shows us how society is today. We've become a cynical, fearful, suspicious society. We don't trust others. Most of us have very few friends. We know a lot of people, but people we could consider friends, maybe, maybe not. Because we've become a society of not only I, me, my, but a society that fears relationships. And it's terrible that we've gotten ourselves into that kind of a situation. Robert Putnam wrote a book which he titled Bowling Alone. He took his title from the fact that while more people are bowling than ever, fewer are doing it in leagues. They're bowling alone. There's been a steady decline in civic involvement, neighborhood relationships, participation in volunteer and religious organizations. Putnam found that the level of community in America is at its lowest point in our lifetime. Therapist Will Miller also wrote a book in which he titled Refrigerator Rights. It has a similar theme, a little bit different. He says we need people around us who have what he calls refrigerator rights. Refrigerator rights is a friend that you wouldn't mind coming into your house and openly going to the refrigerator, helping themselves fix a sandwich or whatever they're doing. That's refrigerator rights. That is a person that is close enough to you that you trust them to go digging around in your kitchen. And that's what we need more of. We need more friends that have refrigerator rights, not isolate ourselves from society because we're afraid to get close to anybody, because maybe we've been burned a time or two or been hurt a time or two. Stuff happens, and you have to accept it as that. And that's what Jesus is trying to tell us, that if you have a conflict with someone, go to that person and talk to them about it. Somebody may have said something to you that hurt your feelings or offended you in some way. They may not have realized it. They may have just said something, popped out of their mouth and didn't think about what they were saying and didn't know they hurt you. Go to that person and say, hey, listen, you know what you said the other day? That kind of bothered me. And they might say, well, gosh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. I was just making a comment. And let it go at that. You might gain a friend. And that's what Jesus is saying. Now, if you make that effort and go to somebody and they don't want to resolve the conflict, Jesus says, well, take a couple of people with you to talk to that person so that you have witnesses that you tried to work this out. And if that doesn't work, then Jesus tells us we should take the person we have a conflict with to the altar in front of the congregation and go through the same thing. Let the whole congregation see that they are not willing to resolve the conflict. And then, in front of all the congregation, if they're not willing to resolve the conflict, treat them as a pagan or a tax collector. There's only so much you can do. What Jesus is telling you to do is try. You should be willing to swallow your pride or go to the other person, even if it wasn't your fault, and talk to that person and work things out. There was a team of Harvard scientists who tracked the lives of 7,000 people over 9 years, and this is what they found out. People with the fewest personal relationships were 3 times more likely to die than those who had strong relationships. 3 times is more likely. In fact, people with bad health habits, such as smoking or poor eating or obesity or alcohol abuse, but they had strong social ties, they had good relationships, actually lived longer than people who had great health habits but were isolated. In other words, as Pastor John Ortberg says, kind of tongue-in-cheek, it is better to eat Twinkies with good friends than to eat broccoli alone. Relationships have a big impact on your life. It's not just about being friends. It's not about doing things together. Relationships help you to live longer, be healthier, be happier. We need other people. Even way back in Adam's time, God realized he needed somebody to have a relationship with. It was not good to be alone, he said. It's not good for us to be alone. We should have relationships. Barbara Streisand had a song here quite a few years ago, said, people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. And that's true. Jesus says, if your brother or sister sins, go out and point out their fault. But just between the two of you, there's no reason to make a big dramatic effect over it if it's just some little thing that the two of you can work out. And that's a very important scripture because it tells us that sometimes it's difficult for us to do that. Sometimes it's hard for us to go to somebody that maybe hurt our feelings and tell them, listen, we get scared to do that. We're afraid of what the outcome is going to be. We just lack the courage to go talk to somebody. Things like that happen in our churches. We've had similar experiences here where something happened or somebody said something and some other people found out about it, didn't like it, and instead of working it out and talking to whoever it was that said whatever that's upset them, they walk out the front door and don't come back. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Jesus wants us to work it out. If you get into a conflict, work it out. You should go to that person and talk to them. Well, Why are you not coming to church anymore? What happened? Is there something we can do? And that's the way it's supposed to be. Chuck Colson says sometimes we confuse love with permissiveness. He says it is not love to fail to dissuade another believer from sin any more than it is love to fail to take a drink away from an alcoholic or matches away from a baby. Love and concern should be a high priority to human beings and especially Christians. Accountability in church. I read a book here about 10 years ago now called Accountable Discipleship. And that's what it's about. We should be accountable for who we are, what we do, and what comes out of our mouth. You should be accountable for that and be willing to apologize if you've offended somebody. It was important enough to John Wesley that as he was founding the Methodist movement, you know, his big thing was small groups. You get 10 or 12 people that once a week would meet together at somebody's house and they would hold each other accountable for what they did over the past week. They would lift each other up. They would help each other out. He was a big on these small groups so that they could help each other. Accountability. But in order to help them, he came up with some questions that they should ask each other whenever they had these meetings. The first one is, am I consciously or unconsciously creating the impression that I am better than I really am? In other words, am I a hypocrite? Am I honest in all my acts and words, or do I exaggerate? Do I confidentially pass on to another what was told to me in confidence? Can I be trusted? If somebody tells you a secret and says, I'm telling you this, but I don't want anybody else to find out, do you go to another one of your friends and say, you know, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but can you be trusted? That's what John Wesley was getting at. Am I a slave to dress, friends, work, or habits? Are you a materialistic person? Did I disobey God in anything over this past week? Do I insist upon doing something about my conscience, even though my conscience is uneasy? Do I do things even though I know in the back of my mind I shouldn't do those things? Is there anyone whom I fear, dislike, disown, criticize, hold a resentment toward, or disregard? If so, what am I doing about it? Do I grumble or complain constantly? And his final question is Christ real to me? Is Christ really in your heart? Is he real to you? All of those are pretty good questions about how we should look at ourselves, how we should look at others, how we should hold one another accountable for who we are, how we should care enough about each other to watch out for each other, take care of each other. John Wesley found that those questions were so rigorous that in these small groups, some people couldn't stand up to it and would leave the groups. I would imagine today, if we were in some kind of a therapy group or whatever you wanted to call it, and we started asking each other these questions, there would be people that would leave those. There would be people that probably wouldn't even get involved in the first place. Relationships are important. Accountability is important. You need to believe that you can appreciate Jesus' words. You need to understand that relationships matter. And that's really the only thing that matters in life, is relationships with each other and with Christ. When life is over, when you're laying there on your deathbed, does it matter that you won all these awards in your life? Does it matter that you had 2 or 3 degrees? Does it matter that you were successful and had a big house and a big car? You don't care about any of that when you're laying on your deathbed. You want friends and loved ones around you. Relationships is important. The most important thing in our lives. That's why Jesus tells us if they refuse to listen after all those attempts, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. There's only so much you can do. But But if you do the right thing and you try to work it out and the other person just won't give, there's only so much you can do. And I'm sure he understands that. I know he says turn the other cheek, but you can only turn the other cheek so many times. He doesn't expect you to stand there and let them beat you up. But you tried to work it out. You tried to fix the relationship. You did everything you could. And Jesus, when he talks about brothers and sisters, he's not necessarily talking about your literal brothers and sisters. That counts too. But he's talking about our Christian brothers and sisters, our brothers and sisters in the community that may not go to church. He is talking about other human beings. He's talking about how we should have good relationships with everybody. Not just in our inner circles, not just those who go to our church, not just those that go to a church, but everybody. We should have good relationships with our brothers and sisters. And it's extremely important. So if someone you care about hurts you, make an attempt to heal that relationship as quickly as possible, even if it isn't your fault. That's practical advice, something we should follow. If you are estranged from a brother and sister, or a coworker, or a friend, or a spouse, pick up the phone and talk to them. Go see them. Try to work it out. There's no point in going through life not liking each other or having ill feelings towards each other. Gilbert and Sullivan, who are two great names in musical theater, they didn't like each other. They had a falling out. Even though they continued to write the music and the lyrics, they would mail the lyrics to one, he'd do the music for it, and mail it back to the first one. They wouldn't talk to each other. When they would perform, they'd stand up on the stage to take a bow. They would stand on opposite sides of the stage and face forward so they didn't have to look at each other and take the bow. That's no way to live your life. But things like that happen. They never settled their grudge. We are not to bear grudges. We should be willing to settle things. We should be willing to let anger and resentment and bitterness go. And it's difficult to take that first step. I know it's difficult. But you have to be willing to take that first step. It matters. There was a family, mom and dad, Ray and Sally. They thought they were raising their children right. They had a good Christian home. They took them to church on Sunday. They did all the right things, they thought. But their youngest son, David, broke their hearts. He got involved in alcohol and drugs and stealing and all the terrible things that you can think of. They tried many times to straighten him out. They tried and prayed and hoped that it would be like the prodigal son, that he'd wake up and come home one day. But he never did. It came down to the point where they had to kick him out of the house because he became so disruptive. Well, a few years later, Ray, the dad, kind of felt bad about all that. He thought there's got to be some way to work this out. So he went and found his son. And he apologized to his son for the resentment that he had towards David's behavior. And it was tough. It was hard for him to swallow his pride and apologize to his son and ask for forgiveness. But David accepted his father's apology, accepted it gracefully. And it turns out that was the nudge that David needed to clean himself up. He got away from the drug addiction, got away from the alcohol, cleaned up his life, got a good, responsible job, married a nice young lady, had a family. That was the little nudge that he needed. And I know a lot of times we have trouble doing that. We have trouble going to somebody and and apologizing, even if we don't feel like we should apologize, that they should apologize to us. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. We should be willing to work it out. But Jesus understands that there may come a time when that relationship needs to come to an end. And that's why he gives you three chances to work it out. Go to that person individually, take a couple of people with you, and then take them before the church. And if you can't work it out, then end that relationship. Treat them as a pagan or a tax collector. He understands that stuff like that happens. We see that a lot around us today. Marriages, the relationships that fail. There are situations where that may be necessary. And he understands that. There's a story of a woman who's dying of cancer. She's in a wheelchair. And her husband suddenly dropped dead of a heart attack. At his funeral, people were leaning over her wheelchair and whispering in her ear, like most people do. You go to someone's funeral and go up to the family member and you say, you know, they're okay, they're with God now. And soon you will be with them again. So everybody was telling her this. Soon you'll be with him again. Don't worry, it's okay. Finally, after a few people said that to her, tears started running down her face. And she looked up and she said, I'm never going to get away from him, am I? You may laugh about that. You may cry about that. Be a sad situation. But not every relationship can be healed. And there are times when people shouldn't be together. We get into those situations, maybe with our families, with someone who's been a close friend for years, and all of a sudden something happened. We get into those situations, but we have to be willing to work it out if we can, if it's possible, through tough love or however you have to do it. But when the attempt fails, or when the attempts fail, if you've gone through this several times, there's only so much you can do. The person that you're going to, the family member or whatever, may be one of those people that they don't care. They're only worried about themselves. What's good for me? And they're defiant to the end, not wanting to work this out. It happens. We see that happen in our society today. Not every story ends like the prodigal son. But Jesus wants us to understand that relationships are vital. And if you can't work out relationships here on earth, you've always got God. And you can always have a relationship with God. He is always standing there, ready, willing, and able to have a relationship with you. Even if you have done something that you think is terrible, and God will never forgive me for it. God will forgive you for it. God wants a relationship with us, with everybody. Relationships are important, extremely important. They're especially important with our church family. They are especially important with our families. They're important to the community. They're important that we hold each other up and help each other out. Just like this graduation ceremony this evening, these ladies that have beaten addiction. Yeah, statistically, some of them might get back into addiction, but we need to be there to support those women, to let them know that we care. We'd like to have a relationship with them. We'd love for you to be a part of our church family or just be a friend. We need to show them that. We give them prayer shawls and they think that's great. It reminds them that somebody cares about them. But they also need to know that we are there for them, just like this evening at 5 o'clock when they graduate. And the men graduate with them as well. They've beaten that addiction. They need to have a relationship with the community around them. So it's all about relationships. It's all about friends. It's all about being willing to swallow your pride and do whatever is necessary to work things out to the best of your ability. And when you can't, when you've made multiple attempts and it just doesn't work, then God understands. Don't worry about it. Let it go. Treat them like a pagan or a tax collector. That may be a little extreme, but that's what he says. He's telling you it's okay. If you've tried and tried and tried and it doesn't work, it's okay. But he wants you to try. He wants us to have relationships with one another. He wants us to love one another and care about each other. Relationships are extremely important. Amen.